This week on Vaticano, relive the most beautiful moments of World Youth Day 2023 in Lisbon. The plight of Christians in the Middle East is deeply concerning. Tasked with upholding the Christian presence in the Holy Land, learn about the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre's vital mission. And after more than 90 years, in serving 8 popes, the Pope's Bakery closes its doors. Vaticano starts now. Francis discussed family values, religious freedom, and the Ukraine war with Hungary's president, Katalin Novak, at the Vatican on Friday, August the 25th. In the 45-minute meeting, the Pope and Novak spoke about the humanitarian situation in Ukraine and efforts to end the conflict, according to a statement by the Holy See Press Office. Additionally, some topics of common interest were discussed, such as the family and Christian values, it said. Novak, a 45-year-old mother of three, has served as Hungary's president since May of 2022. She's the first woman president in the country's history. Prior to taking office, she worked as Hungary's minister for family affairs. Hungary is known for its family-centered policies, which include government bonuses of $33,000 for married couples who have 3 children and have helped boost the country's birth rate. Novak last met Pope Francis last spring in Budapest during the Pope's trip to Hungary from April the 28th to the 30th. During her visit to the Vatican, she also sat down with Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin and Undersecretary for Relations with States Monsignor Miroslav Vakovsky. Days before her meeting with Pope Francis, Novak traveled to Ukraine, where she met one-on-one with President Volodymyr Zelensky and discussed a plan for cooperation on the case of children affected by the war. Novak wrote on social media that the war in Ukraine was also the primary topic of her conversation with Pope Francis.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from Pope Francis in the Vatican. Pope Francis acknowledged that the upcoming Synod on Synodality may be of little interest to the general public, but underlined that the Synod is truly important for the Catholic Church. The Pontiff spoke about the first Global Synod on Synodality, assembly taking place at the Vatican from October 4th to the 28th. It is the first of 2 assemblies that culminate the Church's multi-year worldwide undertaking, during which Catholics were asked to submit feedback at the diocesan, national, and continental levels. The Holy Father decried the increasing influence of a misguided notion of human nature and of the human person, a notion, he continued, that weakens their protection and gradually opens the door to grave abuses under the semblance of good. Speaking at the Vatican, the Pope addressed the lawyers and delegates of the Council of Europe in member countries, who signed the 2022 Vienna Declaration in support of the rule of law. Pope Francis had a private audience with U.S. General Mark Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Neither the Vatican nor the U.S. Department of Defense provided information about the audience. Milley, a Catholic, is the U.S.'s highest-ranking military officer and the principal military advisor to the President, Secretary of Defense, and National Security Council. The meeting between Pope Francis and Milley took place as the Vatican has embarked on a peace-building mission in Ukraine. Cardinal Geraldo Majella Agnello, Archbishop Emeritus of São Salvador da Bahia in Brazil, died at the age of 89. In a telegram of condolence for the Cardinal's death, Pope Francis praised Agnello for his long years of dedicated service to Holy Mother Church. Besides the positions he held in Brazil, Agnello also served at the Vatican from 1991 to 1999 as Secretary of the Congregation for Divine Worship and the Discipline of the Sacraments. The Pontiff announced that he is writing a second part of his environmental encyclical from 2015, Laudato Si. At the end of the general audience on Wednesday, August 30th, Pope Francis announced that on October 4th he will publish this new exhortation, the second part of the Laudato Si encyclical, dedicated to the protection of our common home. The Holy Father has chosen this date because it coincides with the conclusion of the so-called Season of Creation, which is celebrated from September 1st to October 4th, 2023, the day commemorating St. Francis of Assisi. Laudato Si is the second of three encyclicals published during Pope Francis' pontificate up to now. Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. Matthew Santucci for EW10 Vaticano.
In a few moments, we'll be back with more on Vaticano.
Dear young people, I would like to look into the eyes of each one of you and say to you, do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. What is more, I tell you something very beautiful. It is no longer me, it is Jesus himself who is looking at you at this moment. He is looking at us. He knows you. He knows the heart of each one of you. He knows the life of each one of you. He knows your joys, he knows your sorrows, your successes, and your failures. He knows your hearts, and he says to you today, here in Lisbon, at this World Youth Day, do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. Take heart. Do not be afraid.
Anímense. No tengan miedo.
On August the 6th, Pope Francis wrapped up World Youth Day 2023 with Mass at Lisbon's Tejo Park before an estimated 1.5 million young people from all over the world, as well as 10,000 priests and 700 bishops. The 2023 World Youth Day was the 16th edition of this international gathering of young people, first started by Pope St. John Paul II in Rome in 1986. It was intended to be an international gathering of young people, ages 16 to 35, with the Pope, taking place every 2 or 3 years in different cities all over the globe. World Youth Day is an expression of the Universal Church and a powerful moment of evangelization for the world of youth. This World Youth Day was the fourth one attended by Pope Francis, and on his customary in-flight press conference on the way back from Lisbon, he said it was the best one he had attended so far. When asked why he thought so many young people had attended, he replied,
they are religious. They are looking for a non-hostile, non-artificial, non-legalistic faith, for an encounter with Jesus Christ.
The theme for this World Youth Day comes from the Gospel of Luke. After the angel Gabriel announced to Mary that she would bear the Son of God, Mary went to visit her cousin Elizabeth. Pope Francis reflected that Mary could have focused on herself and her own worries and fears about her new condition. Instead, she entrusted herself completely to God. Her thoughts turned to Elizabeth. She got up and went forth into the world of life and movement, and she went quickly as a pilgrim and a beacon of hope. Thus, the 2023 World Youth Day theme is Mary arose and went with haste. Mary didn't turn inward, but outward, to encounter her cousin Elizabeth, following God's desire for her life. World Youth Day took place from August the 1st to the 6th. The Holy Father arrived on August the 2nd. The Pope's schedule consisted of a welcoming ceremony on August the 2nd at the Palacio Nacional de Belém. On August the 4th, Pope Francis led the Stations of the Cross at Colina do Encontro in Parque Eduardo VII. On August the 5th, Pope Francis prayed for peace and consecrated the Church and the world to the Blessed Virgin Mary during the rosary the Holy Father recited at the Shrine of Our Lady of Fatima. There were 200,000 people present. On August the 5th, there was a vigil with young people at Campo da Graça in Parque Tejo that was attended by 1.5 million young people. On August the 6th, the World Youth Day Mass was at Campo da Graça. At the concluding Mass for this year's World Youth Day, Pope Francis challenged the young people to ask themselves, what will we take back with us to the valley of our daily lives? Drawing on the day's gospel, the Holy Father proposed three verbs: to shine, to listen, and to be unafraid.
También hoy nosotros necesitamos algo de luz.
We too need to light, a burst of light that is hope to face so much darkness that assails us in life. Jesus, because he is the light that does not go out, the light that shines even in the night. We do not become luminous when we focus the spotlight on ourselves. We become luminous, we shine, when welcoming Jesus. We learn to love like him, to love like Jesus. That makes us luminous. That leads us to do works of love.
Eso nos lleva a hacer obras de amor.
Although this World Youth Day ended in Lisbon, it ended with an invitation to two places for two events, the Jubilee Year 2025 in Rome and World Youth Day in Seoul, South Korea in 2027.
In Seoul.
The plight of Christians in the Middle East is deeply concerning. Tasked with upholding the Christian presence in the Holy Land, the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre stands as a Catholic knighthood order with this vital mission.
Your Excellency, thank you for the gift of your time.
Engaging in a conversation, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President of EWTN News, engages Leonardo Visconti di Modrone, the Governor General of this order, to uncover their initiatives. Di Modrone sheds light on the unsettling decline of Christianity in the Holy Land and the underlying causes. Furthermore, he provides insights into his endeavor centered around the Palazzo delle Rovere in Rome.
I'd like to start with a question about your vision for the Order of the Holy Sepulchre.
Well, I look at the Order of the Holy Sepulchre as a modern institution with an old story, but an institution that looks at the future rather than at the past. We have kept the past as a memory, but we must think of the action we have to perform for the present and for the future, especially thinking of the Holy Land. So in some ways I try to modernize the order, keeping the traditions, of course, but I don't want to impose new rules or new methods, but certainly I want to be update with the realities and the situation in the land of Jesus.
What do you see are the most important goals for the order, but also for the members of the order?
Well, for the order, of course, the goal is to maintain the Christian presence in the Holy Land, a presence that is under pressure for political reasons, for economic reasons, and who suffered tremendously for the COVID in the past 2 years. And that is where we really make our biggest effort. And of course, this is an effort shared with all the members.
I want to ask you about the situation that Christians are facing in the Holy Land. I know that this is a difficult situation for them economically and in other ways.
The Christians' presence in the Holy Land is declining, is constantly declining. Now, the reasons of this decline, actually there are many reasons, economic, social, and also political reasons. And this is something that we as members of the Order of the Holy Sepulchre try to prevent, to fight back, because we believe that the Christian's presence in the land of our Lord is essential. And the maintaining of Mother Church in Jerusalem is essential for our faith.
What is the order doing right now to help the Christians there?
Well, in this very moment, we are concentrating our action in collecting resources to finance pastoral and humanitarian activities. And the second priority, but I would say equally important, is to promote education, to finance our schools, our Christian schools and university in the Holy Land, to form a new generation that is formed with our principles of dialogue, of friendship, of mutual understanding.
And I know you've been focused on the project here in this magnificent Palazzo delle Rovere. Talk about that project briefly.
Well, this is a palazzo that was donated to the order by Pius XII. And why was it donated to Pius XII? I like to recall the parable of the talents in the gospel. When the Lord leaves his home and gives several talents to his servants according to their capacity. So what I believe is that Pope Pius XII gave this palazzo to the order because he thought that we were capable of doing something important with this palace. And that is what actually we are doing. We are hiring a part of this palazzo in order to have resources, additional resources, that not only will cover entirely the expenses of the Grand Magisterium, but will give us other resources for the Holy Land.
Very important work, and I know that you have many labors ahead of you, so you are in our prayers.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time, Governor.
We'll be back after a short break with more on Vaticano.
The bread for the Holy Father, who was then Pius II before the war, was placed inside like a locked chest. And my grandfather and my father had the key. They would open it, put the bread in and close it. The other key was in the papal apartment, and this practice lasted throughout the entire pontificate.
Situated just a few meters from the Vatican, the Borgo Pio neighborhood has undergone a transformation and is no longer characterized by poverty. The combination of increased tourism and the absence of state assistance compelled Angelo Arrigoni, the owner of the bakery that has supplied bread for the last eight popes, to shut down operations.
Unfortunately, the bakery will close. The pandemic and the high energy costs in the end brought us down. In short, we are no longer competitive. It's a shame. I'm sorry, because my grandfather and father made great sacrifices. They went through the war, and thanks to this bakery, the neighborhood managed to eat bread. They provided free hot water for the children during the winter. They gave away the leftover embers from the bakery to heat the houses because it was a very poor neighborhood. And then we would cook. They would bring us pots and we would cook in them. In short, it was a center of life.
Insomma, è stato un centro di vita.
During the time of Pope Pius XI, a trusted aide would visit Arrigoni's bakery at dawn, carrying a lockable coffer of portable briefcase size. This precaution was taken to prevent any poisoning attempts, and the key was entrusted to only two individuals, one of whom was Angelo Arrigoni's father, the former proprietor of the bakery, who was prepared to protect it with his life. The baker would place the preferred Viennese bread of Achille Ratti, who was elected pontiff on February the 6th, 1922, inside the coffer. Subsequently, the bread would be handed over to the nuns serving the Pope, who held the other key in the papal apartment. Each pontiff had a preference for a specific type of bread. Pope St. John Paul II, when asked what type of bread he would like prepared, replied, "The bread my workers eat." Angelo's staff would send the Holy Father five rosettes, a simple inflated bread, and five ciriole, a classic Roman bread.
Veniva Ratzinger, però io non sapevo che era.
Ratzinger used to come, but I didn't know he was Ratzinger. At that time, he was a cardinal, but he always dressed like a regular priest. He used to come to choose bread. Normally, he would take the whole wheat bread, the one without yeast, which was a specialty. Not every day, but about 2 to 3 times a week. Then, when he became Pope, as usual, we would call the papal apartment, even though we knew what he wanted, and we would ask for the quantity and the type of bread he wanted. So the nun went to ask the Holy Father. She came back embarrassed, and she said, "No, we're sorry, but the Holy Father has his own baker in the Borgo." So I said to her, "Sister, I'm the baker." And she replied, "So he knows what he's getting." "Yes, I know, but I have to call him." And so we continued to serve him even when he was Pope Emeritus until the end, almost.
When Pope Francis arrived, Angelo and his staff began investigating the most common bread in Argentina to have it ready. However, the nuns informed them that the Holy Father didn't want bread made specifically for him, and that they should just send the leftover bread. Every pontiff has his own distinctive bread preference, and in some ways, it can say a lot about who he is. After 3 generations of bakers in the family, and having served 8 pontificates, the papal bakery has now closed its ovens, marking the end of a chapter in history.